You are listening to the Pale Horse Podcast. This is the Pale Horse Podcast. I'm your host, DC Janot.
Welcome to the Pale Rider Podcast. The subject for today's podcast is the drug violence in Mexico and America's insatiable appetite for narcotics, which fuels all the pain and the suffering of the modern-day Mexican people. And so much more. But we're not the only ones responsible for it. The United States intelligence agencies for years have used South America and Mexico as a place to cut their teeth. Don't forget that in the 80s on Buffalo Ranch, the CIA formed the Contras. They armed them, they trained them. Then they sent them back to Nicaragua to do their dirty work, to bring about the expected end that the CIA wanted. Then they flew those planes back full of cocaine to be distributed to major American cities. And don't forget also that the biggest cocaine bust in history was made in America on a ship owned by J.P. Morgan Chase. Over $1.1 billion worth of cocaine laid end to end, the bricks would have stretched 2.2 miles, over 3 kilometers. When I contacted J.P. Morgan and Chase, they refused to comment, though no one from J.P. Morgan and Chase will ever be arrested for a single gram of that $1.1 billion or 15,000 kilograms of cocaine. But make no mistake about it, if you get caught with a half a gram of it, you will do time in prison. We'll start with the Sinaloa Cartel, a group based in Sinaloa that was originally led by drug lords Jesus Pena, called L20, and may he rest in peace, Jose Rodrigo Arechiga Gamboa, alias El Chino Anthrax, the Chinese Anthrax. Rene Velasquez Valenzuela, El Sargento Phoenix, among many others. These men are responsible for a number of homicides and for providing armed security to the forces of Ismael El Mayo Zambada. And if you know anything about El Mayo, you know he's the real operator and runner. He's the king of the castle of the Sinaloa Cartel. The gang operates out of the capital city of Culiacan, Sinaloa, where its members conduct homicides and violent attacks. The name Los Anthrax is inspired from the bacterial spores of anthrax, although the Sinaloa state authorities have never fully recognized the group's existence. I can't imagine why. It's because there's collusion at the highest levels and the lowest levels and the mid-levels of the Mexican authorities and the government and the army and even some of the Marines. Collusion with the cartels. They let the cartels take out their and do their dirty work for them. And the police, in return, protect the cartels and give snitches over to them, allowing them to run through certain corridors while not allowing their rival cartels the same mercy and privilege. But El Chino Anthrax, who recently escaped from U.S. custody, was a family and lifelong friend of El Mayo. He actually began as the bodyguard for one of El Mayo's sons until he moved up to be a bodyguard of El Mayo himself. His right-hand man, Jesus Pena, known as El 20, Pena escaped from a prison in Sinaloa on March 16, 2017 with four other subjects, including alleged members of Los Anthrax, Rafael Guadalupe Felix Nunez, alias Changuito Anthrax, and Juan Jose Esparragoza Monzon, the son of Juan Jose Esparragoza Moreno. A fierce gunfight between members of the Sinaloa cartel with the backing of Los Anthrax and the Beltran Leyva cartel with support of the Zetas left about 30 dead in Tubatama, Sonora, northern Mexico on 1st July 2010. The gangs clashed just a few miles across the international border with the U.S. state of Arizona in an area that's notorious as a smuggling route for narcotics and human trafficking. 11 late-modeled, bullet-ridden vehicles were found at the scenes, along with dozens of high-caliber assault rifles. Some of the wheels had X painted on their windows, a method often used by Mexican drug trafficking organizations to distinguish the vehicles of rival cartels during armed confrontations. Los Anthrax gained public attention when a squadron of Mexican army was patrolling a neighborhood in southern Culiacan. They spotted three vehicles, all whom had assailants inside, which were armed to the teeth. The encounter led to a gunfight, but the Mexican police managed to neutralize three members of Los Anthrax. They also liberated three kidnapping victims from a safe house in the area, a man, a woman who had been, no doubtedly, raped and beaten, and a man who'd had his toes and ears mutilated, and also a five-year-old girl. The three gunmen killed in the shootout, Jose Humberto Corona Guillen, Franklin Olguin Velasquez, and Pedro Valenzuela Meza, had died from gunshot wounds they received during the shootout. May they rest in peace. No disrespect if I mispronounce their names. I did it in ignorance and unintentionally. But you see, the postmortem report indicates that the gunman had been beaten and tortured by soldiers before being killed. Even the official account of the event was that they died in a gun battle. On 1st November 2011, an indoor football game was going on in Culiacan, Sinaloa, when an armed commando interrupted the game and killed Francisco Arce Rubio, the leader of Los Anthrax. Several men carrying AK-47 and handguns interrupted the soccer game at Deportivo Jimmy Ruiz Stadium and forced all the players to lie face down on the field at around 11 p.m. Once they had subdued everyone on the field, the gunman executed one of the team's managers and then went on to kill Arce Rubio, age 30. After the double homicide, the gunman departed. Needless to say, the game did not continue. Arce Rubio was reportedly killed by rival members of Los Mazatlecos, a gang headed by Fausto Isidro Medro Meza Flores, nicknamed El Chapo Isidro. It was also reportedly announced that it was Arce Rubio who was responsible for assassinating two nephews of Armando and Vicente Carrillo Fuentes in Sinaloa. Meza Flores and his gang a reportedly part of the Beltran Leyva cartel, who disputes the drug trafficking corridors with the Sinaloa cartel in western Mexico. The weekend that Arce Rubio was killed, the state of Sinaloa experienced at least 20 homicides possibly linked to the drug lord's death in one incident. Three bodies were hung from a bridge in a town of Guamuchil. In another incident at a volleyball court in Culiacan, unidentified gunmen killed 8 people and injured several others. Several other bullet-ridden corpses were found throughout the state that same weekend. Chino Anthrax, may he rest in peace, was arrested by Dutch police on December 30, 2013 at the Amsterdam airport Schiphol in the Netherlands at the request of the United States and Interpol for the charges of drug trafficking. On 20 February 2014, Mexican authorities arrested Jesus Pena, L20, in Culiacan. Following a massive operation carried out to capture El Mayo Zambada, and on 23rd of May 2014, Melicio Beltran Medina, alias El Mele, was killed at the Morelos neighborhood in Culiacan. Following the arrest of El Chino Anthrax, some sources, British, claimed that Claudia Ochoa Felix was the new leader of the group. This information was not officially confirmed, and she has denied her involvement in organized crime. Ochoa Felix was found dead at her private residence in Culiacan. May she rest in peace. Due to an apparent pulmonary aspiration caused by a drug overdose. The previous night, having been seen going home with a man, whom to this day is unidentified after attending a party. The morning after, they found her dead at the scene. I'm not saying this is what happened, but a common modus operandi or a common operation that these groups execute is to shoot someone up with a large amount of heroin or phenobarbital, also known as truth serum, to get him to talk. If you've ever met someone who's recently injected methamphetamines, they'll tell you anything and everything you want to know. Or they sit there and make someone snort cocaine until they overdose and die at gunpoint. The cartels love to play games with people. I know of one game called Red Light, Green Light, where you'll be driving down the streets with your family one day and a car will suddenly start following you very closely and flashing its lights, honking its horn. And if you pull over your vehicle and get out of your car and throw up your hands like, "What's up, man? What's the problem?" Well, they execute you. But if you pull over the car and approach them in a calm manner and say, "Can I help you? Is there something I can do for you?" Or if you stay in your car and just pull over and roll down your window and don't say anything disrespectful, they will pull up and flash a gun at you, knock on your window, at which point you should roll it down if you're wise, and they'll throw 10 grand in your car and drive away. There is a party going on one night. All the names of the famous people you could imagine. El Mayo Zambada, El Azul, Jose Moreno, the Beltran Leyva brothers were there also. A policeman pulled over a famous Mexican boxer known as Jorge El Travisio Arce. He was blindfolded, taken to a party where all of these major cartel bosses, they said, "Champ, we love you. Get ready to take care of yourself. We want to bet on you." There was an X5 with a red bow on top of it. He said, "What about that truck?" He said, "That's for you." He said, "That's not for me. I can't take that." He said, "Man, we all got together and bought it for you. You don't want it?" He said, "I can't take that truck. I can't pay for it. I can't accept it. When they asked him what he wanted, he said that he simply wanted to be returned to the place that he had been picked up from, safe and sound. All I want is for you to take me back to where you picked me up from and nothing else to happen to me. I don't accept this gift. Well, he didn't accept that gift, and here he is today alive. Imagine that. Everyone brings passion to a boxing match. Those inside the ring and those outside of the ring, and then that's why Arce said that he attracted the attention of these cartel bosses. He's going to do a series on his life, and in the series he will tell the whole story, including everyone that was there and everything that happened. From an unnamed source who is a personal friend of mine who has a 15 square mile ranch in the middle of Sinaloa, right near Buffalo Ranch, where the CIA trained and armed the Contras in the 80s during the Contra affair. The gunmen of a cartel were manning a checkpoint, which is nothing strange in Mexico, and a refrigerated truck pulls up to the checkpoint. The cartel members check his papers, and his papers are all legal, but they indicate that he's working for a rival cartel, or that is, he has the paperwork for the wrong cartel to whom he says he's working for. So they order him out of the truck, and what was found in the back of that refrigerated truck shocked even the hardened members of these cartel that I will remain unmentioned. Inside the refrigerated truck were dozens of children. They had been gutted like deer, and all of their organs had been removed, packaged in hermetically sealed packages labeled with blood types. Their partial pieces of skin were removed, packaged, and all in a surgical manner, labeled for destinations all over the United States and no doubt abroad. This is shocking and disgusting, but it is 100% true. I wouldn't dare post the pictures of this, but if for some reason it is beyond your ability to believe what I'm telling you, and you wish to see them, contact me and I can show you in person. I refuse to send them over any sort of electronic device or social media, not only for my safety and the safety of my friend in Mexico, but out of respect for these poor children. The most alarming fact is yet to come. These children were all abducted in a 24-hour period, and they were street children from Mexico. Now, what is alarming is that in a 24-hour period, the logistics were in place to not only kidnap these children, but to surgically remove their organs in a precise and proper manner, package them, label, separated by blood type, etc., etc., and were on their way to a border crossing in somewhere in the state of Texas, is all I can say. This means that these children were hunted, because these types of transplants have to have exact blood types, so on and so forth. I'm not a medical professional, but I do know that not only was this a very highly organized and effective group of men and possibly women that were doing this, but there is some collusion on a very high level of the medical community in most likely both countries, but at least in the countries where these organs were headed to. the country in which you and I live in. Now, human trafficking has always been an issue. Just the other day, the bodies of some 39 Vietnamese nationals were found dead in a tractor trailer near London. Around a year ago, maybe a little less. At first, it thought that the victims were to be Chinese, but they were all identified later as Vietnamese, and their names were released on November 8th. The victims ranged from ages 15 to 44. Their cause of death was determined to be asphyxiation. They suffocated to death because the refrigeration went out in the trailer, or the refrigeration got caught, stuck on, if you will, and was not being checked by the satellite link system that the truck had, and these people froze to death, one or the other. I've heard two different accounts, neither of which can be confirmed at this point. The driver was a 25-year-old named Maurice Robinson of Northern Ireland. He was arrested and ultimately charged with 39 counts of manslaughter, as well as one count each of conspiracy to traffic people, conspiracy to assist in unlawful immigration, and acquiring criminal property and transferring criminal property. He pleaded guilty to conspiracy to assist unlawful immigration and acquiring criminal property on Monday, appearing via video link at his pretrial hearing in the Criminal Court of England in Wales and London. But another man from Northern Ireland, 23-year-old Christopher Kennedy, has been charged with conspiracy to arrange or facilitate the travel of people with view to exploit them, and conspiracy to facilitate the commission of a UK immigration law. He appeared Monday morning in the magistrate's court in Chelmsford, about 40 miles northeast of London, although no pleas were entered. Kennedy is due to appear in the Central Criminal Court in England and Wales in London, December 2013. So although these are two cases of human trafficking, one was the harvesting of poor children's organs for, no doubt, rich politicians and elites and leaders of criminal organizations and mafias all over the United States and abroad. And the other was a case of poor Vietnamese people whom, having put their faith in people to smuggle them into a country, ultimately put their faith in something vain. You could argue that both were intentional. We know for sure one was intentional. But the tragic thing here is that life has lost its value and death has no meaning. Life is so cheap. The average sicario in Mexico, an 18, 19-year-old kid getting a list of people to kill, a list he will complete by the end of the day or he will be killed himself, and being paid $400 to $600 a month to do it. You have to understand, this is the cost. And it's the Mexican people and people all over the earth, the poor, who pay the price. So think about that next time you snort a little cocaine at the bar with your buddies, or the next time you think about wanting to be a narco trafficante, or the next time you let rap music, for example, impose its culture of violence and drugs upon your children. I want you to think about that before you decide to glorify the life, a life that if you've ever led, you know that once you get to the top of the mountain, it's real lonely up there. Once you've had money, money doesn't impress you. Once you've had power, power doesn't impress you. Anything that you don't do for the glory of God, you ultimately do for the glory of a fool. I know that some of you have tried to repent, but you can't seem to change. That Satan is using your body and your mind. I pray that, Lord, I pray that they don't cross over your mercy line. I pray that this podcast will reach someone, somewhere, who needs to hear that they've been sold a lie, that their life does matter, and that they are sinners. They are hell-deserving sinners who deserve hell because they're sinners who love their sin. But God loves you anyways. Will not the judge of all the earth do right, he says. Do I not deserve those for whom I died? I endured the agonies of hell for them, but I love them. I don't take the time to make these podcasts for respect or to be esteemed. I don't make any money doing them, and I don't plan to. I wouldn't accept it if it was offered. My only reason for being is that by the grace of God and through repentance, God has brought me to a place where I can enter into the fullness of His Son. And my attitude is the attitude of His Son, Jesus Christ, Messiah HaMashiach, who says, I can do nothing of myself. I cannot speak of myself. I do not make plans for myself. My only reason for being is the glory of God. So let God have your life. Therefore, you can come to a place by the grace of God where you've been pardoned for His glory. Why should a person come to Christ? Why should a person be willing to go down to the tomb and up again and identify with the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ? Why should a person be willing to live as a Christian in a world that is so anti-Christ, it's unbelievable? Because it's the only way that God can get glory out of a human being. If I were to say to you tonight, come to Jesus so you can go to heaven, come to Jesus so you don't go to hell, I'd be falling into the trap of humanism. But friend, I say to you that if you were out there and you do not know Jesus, Come, present your body a living sacrifice, asking Him to fill you with His Spirit. Come to your own funeral tonight and die to self and end all the suffering and all the weakness and all the failure and all the pain and lay it at the nail-pierced feet of the Son of God. Lay it down at the cross, lay it down at the altar, and never pick it up again. You see, Christ didn't pray for Judas, but He did pray for Peter. And He didn't pray when He told Peter, the devil has asked to sift you like wheat. But He didn't pray that Peter wouldn't sin. He didn't pray that Peter would escape the temptations of the devil. He prayed that his faith would not fail him. And I pray tonight for all of you that your faith would not fail. But remember, it doesn't matter how genuine your faith is. If you put your faith in anything other than Jesus Christ, your faith is ultimately worth nothing and will ultimately get you nothing but eternal separation and suffering, eternal separation from God, and eternal torment in hell. This has been the Pale Rider Podcast, and I'm your host, DC Janot. How great is our God? Have you any conception of what it means to know Christ? For the sovereign supernatural of God to come down from heaven and move among men. Oh, that we might see it. Oh, that we might see it.
This has been another episode of the Pale Horse Podcast. We'll see you next time. What is your life? It is but a vapor that appeareth for a little while, and then it vanisheth away.